I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicmultiverse.com. I'm Joe Cunningham, and joining me to help make sense of the comics behind the TV show is...
Seb Patrick.
So, Seb, we have convened for a special bonus episode before we get round to discussing Kingsman: The Secret Service, and I think we both thought it was about damn time that we got to discussing The Flash.
Yeah.
It's particularly ironic, maybe, that it has taken us so long, that we've been so slow off the marks in getting to discussing The Flash.
Well, we've been like Barry before the accident. We've been late. Yeah.
Because we have pretty much, since this show started airing 2 seasons ago, have both fallen in love with this thing, right? For me, it is... And there's the Netflix stuff and this, that, and the other. There is a lot of superhero and comic book TV around at the moment. But for me, if there's an episode of The Flash to watch, I'm going to watch that above maybe any other TV show. I just, like, I love it so much.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, in part, that's because, and I don't know how true it is for you as well, but in part, it's because it's the one that my wife also enjoys watching. And also, I've recently moved, we moved back in with my parents, and they watch several shows. They watch several shows that I don't watch because they love Gotham. And they don't watch Arrow, but they also, well, it's the two actually that are surprising, is that they watch Gotham and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They're like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s two remaining viewers. And they liked Legends of Tomorrow, but I think sort of they fell a bit behind on that, and they fell a bit behind on Supergirl the same way I did. So in this house, though, there are four of us who enjoy watching The Flash, and we all watched the finale together just after I moved here. Mm. And yeah, it's similarly, Joe, I mean, we started watching Supergirl, and she thought that was fine. She didn't like the start of Daredevil, and that was one of the reasons it took me a while to start getting through Daredevil. She felt the same about Jessica Jones. 10 minutes into Jessica Jones, she was bored off her arse. But Flash, you know, I mean, you know, she's not massively into superhero things generally, but she, you know, she does like the Marvel films. But Flash, there was enough that she found enjoyable. She likes the characters, apart from Iris. I mean, she hates Iris. But it's just, it's enjoyable. You know, it's something we can always happily sit down and watch every week, and we want to know what happens, you know, which is, again, that's quite a Joe way of judging something is... she'll carry on watching something if she wants to know what happens next. And in The Flash, she always wants to know what happens next.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just, you know, it's just got about it a lot of what I tend to like about superhero stuff. It's got a lead character who isn't perfect, but who is someone who wants to be a hero and do right. It's got a good supporting cast around him, by which I mean the characters are good, and also the, you know, the actors generally are good at what they do. It's got a nice, hopeful, upbeat sense about it, generally. It's a bit daft in places. it's a bit funny in places. And as I've mentioned on a previous episode, you know, there are certain things within superhero comics, so kind of tropes within superhero storytelling, that I particularly like and that will make me like a particular superhero thing ahead of others. And one of them is alternate universes. And, you know, The Flash is the show that has brought the concept of alternate universes to this entire DC TV world. So it's got that in its favour as well, because I always like when shows do that. And it's nicely appropriate that it's the one to do it, because it was Flash Comics that created alternate universes in DC Comics in the first place 60-odd years ago. So it is appropriate that it was Flash that would go ahead and do it.
I probably should flag up spoilers from the start, ladies and gentlemen, for both seasons of The Flash. For me, this is a show that I can sit down and watch with my fiance. She wants a Flash t-shirt, but we have to specifically find one that people aren't going to confuse her for a Big Bang Theory fan, because that is important.
There is a great one called Central City Running Club that I've got one of, but it's a bit too small for me at the moment because I'm too fat. But that's a good design. You should look it up. I've seen several people with it, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so we're able to watch it together. And I think for me, I have watched basically all of Supergirl, just pending watching the season finale this weekend because it just aired in the UK. I've watched 3 and a bit seasons of Arrow. I've watched a little bit of Legends of Tomorrow, and then, you know, all of the other shows that we've discussed on this podcast, Agent Carter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Gotham. I've watched bits and bats of everything. And for me, this is the show that just hits the sweet spot, in that it has the spectacle of being a superhero show. They are able to do the kind of stuff that you want to see from The Flash on a TV budget, and it doesn't feel cheap, it doesn't feel restricted, it feels like it can tell the stories it wants to tell. It has the perfect kind of protagonist. I mean, Seb, I know back in the early days of this podcast, you were saying how, you know, it was when we were saying, who's going to play Spider-Man in the MCU? Well, wouldn't it be great if it was Grant Gustin? Because he has that kind of sense about him. This Barry Allen feels Peter Parker-ish, and, you know, me and you love Peter Parker as a character, so for me, Barry Allen works great. And then the supporting cast, I mean, you were just saying how Joe doesn't like Iris and hates Iris. I mean, she should watch Arrow, because Laurel, for me, was unbearable, and she, for me, was, at least in the early seasons, less so in the later seasons, but kind of the equivalent on that show of the kind of the love interest who was the love interest because she is in the comics and not necessarily based on any chemistry on the show. I think Iris has got a lot better in season 2. I think they figured out how to use her a lot better. And the whole kind of family dynamic that the show has, that it has the family dynamic of kind of the friends of the people of the group that kind of bond together at Star Labs, and there's kind of a little bit of a rolling in and out of different characters there, but also the fact that, yes, what drives Barry kind of at the core of his character is losing his mother, which we see like in the very first scene at the start of the pilot episode, is the flashback to his mother dying. And the counterbalance to that is that he has like 3 or 4 different father figures in his life, that he has Joe, who raised him and is constantly there, you know, having these little moments every 2 or 3 episodes that are going to make you well up a little bit when he says something inspirational to Barry. That you've got his actual dad in prison. You've got Harrison Wells in his various guises. And even when he is an evil villain pretending to be a father figure, he still is inspirational. He still is kind of, you buy that relationship because his motivations actually are noble at least in the respect that he wants Barry to run faster. And then you've even got characters rolling in like Victor Garber, Martin Stein, who kind of fill that role as well. And that's the stuff that makes this show great, because all of the relationships work. You buy so wholeheartedly into the emotions of your central character and the relationships that he has with the people around him, that even if it's a naff rogue of the week, you're still going to get your laughs from Cisco, and you're still going to get your emotional moments from Joan, you're still going to get your superheroics from Barry. It almost doesn't matter what the kind of story of the week is.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, the story of the week often tends to be the weakest element of the show. And it's kind of like, it's the, you know, the battle with a random meta where Barry gets coached by the team to run slightly faster in order to defeat them.
Yeah.
It almost feels like, you know, that is what the show feels an obligation to get through that week in order to bring you what you actually want from the show, which is a combination of, you know, the kind of the longer term story arc, because it's not the kind of show that can just only focus on its story arc throughout the entire season. It, you know, it does have to have weekly self-contained episodes, and the character dynamic stuff, and particularly the character dynamic stuff is what keeps coming back. I enjoyed the second season plotline, the Zoom and Jay and Earth 2 stuff. I know that some people didn't, but I think even if you don't necessarily get on with the arc, and you don't necessarily get, I mean, this feels like an odd thing to say about a show, but it's like, even if you don't get on with the plot, either in its long form or short form, what keeps you coming back are the characters and those character dynamics. And it's like, you know, I'd be tempted to say, a particular character, oh, they're the standout thing about the show. But actually, you could say it about almost any of them. I mean, the obvious one for me is Harrison Wells, Tom Cavanagh. And I think I'll talk about him in a bit more detail later on. He, you know, he is the best thing about the show for me. But you can't just say that the show is good because of him, because Sisko is great. And Caitlin is great, and obviously Grant Gustin is fantastic as Barry. And when you were talking about the father figures, and you mentioned Joe, and I think Joe is in danger of getting overshadowed by the rest of the show. And I think what Jesse Martin does in that show is really underrated. Like, not that anyone says that he's not any good, but I think it's very easy to kind of ignore Joe's role in the show because it's just something that's very easy to take for granted. And what he does with that character and the emotional stuff that he does with Grant Gustin, and you know, he has such good chemistry with Grant Gustin as this father figure too, much more so than, much as I love the guy, much more so than John Wesley Shipp does, although even there are moments that are nice between the two of them, but as much as I like him, there are moments where John Wesley Shipp feels clunky to me in the show. I'm glad he's in it, and I don't want them to take him out of it, but you can also see why they slightly limit his screen time sometimes.
Yes.
whereas I always feel confident that any moment, even if it's going to be a slightly cheesy moment, any moment that they give Joe and Barry in terms of Joe having to be that kind of emotional anchor for him always works and is always really well sold. But it doesn't necessarily come to mind as the best stuff in the show because it's not the fun stuff in the show, and the fun stuff in the show usually revolves around Tom Cavanagh. The multiple roles that he's already played on that show by being, you know, initially scientist guy Harrison Wells, which was, you know, decent enough and interesting character, then being the out and out villain, and then in season two, and you do kind of wonder, what are they going to do with season two? How are they going to play it? And, you know, the constantly it's ambiguous
the reverse
role. Yeah, you know, you not being sure to start with in season two whether he was going to be a goodie or a baddie, and the fact that the answer turns out to be no, he is a goodie, but he's also a dick.
Yes,
just worked so perfectly. You know, his sparky relationship with Sisko, and then, you know, it meant that you had this. And I'm jumping right to the end of season two here, but it meant that you had this great, the way that Wells felt about all of the characters and the way that they felt about him right at the end of the season felt completely earned. You know, you had watched them, you know, that cold exterior being chipped away
and
him actually coming to care about them, and the little thing of him, doesn't he actually, he calls Sisko right at the very end of the season, and it's just rather
it's a great moment. But yeah, you got all that through the first season as well, and I agree. I mean, Tom Cavanagh's performance is fantastic. We've just gone back and started re-watching the first season. That is how much I love this show. And the first time that he says, run, Barry, run, and like, it's spine-tingling. It's great. It's become so iconic. And you have the inverse of what you just said running through the first season, which is kind of really loving this character. And despite the fact from... There are tags at the end of the first two episodes. The first episode, the tag is he stands up and walks. You see that he's probably from the future and that there is something evil about him. The second episode, he literally kills a dude. And you're like, but you're still
you still want him.
And I remember doing kind of like mental gymnastics trying to figure out how he was actually good. That maybe he wasn't purely evil. And
maybe
and
it like, was a greater good kind of thing. I mean, yeah. It did turn out that everything that he was doing was to help Barry get faster. It's just that his reasons for wanting Barry to get faster were evil. But,
and that works fantastically as a slow-build villain throughout the season because... That for me was the problem with Zoom, was at the moment that Zoom was out and out Zoom, hey, I'm the villain, then given that he's a serial killer and he can go around killing people at any point, the stakes felt too big and it felt a little bit like, well, how do you go off and fight random rogue of the week when Zoom is out there and at the height of his powers? Whereas Reverse Flash was there and he was always a threat and he was, and because... especially because of that fantastic two-part episode in the middle of season one where you flash back in time, where the Flash goes back in time to reverse events, not even knowing himself that Harrison Wells has just killed Cisco. And
that the way you had that episode that actually felt like a season finale in the middle of the season was just phenomenal.
And then and then you kind of know what a threat he is, but he is still kind of in the background. And then that leads me on to one of the other things that I think is great about the show, is that it never slows down plotting-wise. Like I say, to reveal at the end of the first episode that Harrison Wells is, you know, probably the Reverse Flash in the future. And, like, in that episode that I just talked about, so Barry goes back in time, kind of, Cisco isn't killed, and... it's kind of all slowed back down that you've got now 7-8 episodes before the season ends, and you can kind of slow build towards the revelation that Harrison Wells is in fact Eobard Thawne and the Reverse Flash. But the show doesn't do that. Within like an episode, Barry knows that Harrison Wells is not telling the truth, starts investigating him, and the show doesn't make you wait for things. It doesn't bed something. It just...
It's like an excitable child. Like, it's just like, it's like the show's got all of this these secrets and it's bursting to tell you, and it's like it can't contain them all. So it's just like, oh, do you know what? Yeah, you are gonna find out. Like, I can't remember how early it is in season two, but it's not that late that you find out that you know, that Jay isn't Jay.
Yeah.
You know, they will just happily chuck all of this stuff in early on, because actually what you think is the big revelation turns out not to be the big revelation. Yeah. You know, it's like there's more to follow kind of thing. You know, with season two, I was surprised that they left it as long until the very last episode to reveal who the man in the mask was, although even then they had pretty... Again, it's like they couldn't keep it to themselves. They had basically already... told you that it was Jay, that it was the real Jay. And, you know, okay, so the specifics might have been a secret. But even then, I had been saying, and I wasn't the only one, for weeks, oh, John Wesley Shipp is going to be the real Jay. That's how they're going to play it. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
But again, still, when I'm watching this show, I am always doing those mental gymnastics to try and think, well, could it be Earth 2 Eddie? Why haven't we seen Earth 2 Eddie yet? And maybe Earth 2 Eddie is more like his, you know, his future ancestor or whatever that is.
I was surprised that there was literally no... Oh, no, hang on. Did Eddie make a brief appearance in season 2? Or was he literally not in it at all?
Oh, maybe he did. I can't remember.
I'm trying to remember if there was actually...
No, but there was because there was the birthday message.
Oh, yes, there was. So when he was on Earth, no, it wasn't on Earth 2, it was when he went back in time, wasn't it?
Is that back in time? Maybe maybe we didn't then. I don't know, but that is this show, isn't it?
Was the birthday message this season? No, he was. He did guess it. I'm just looking it up on Wikipedia, actually. He did guess. But I was just wondering if there was a reason why he
That was when he went back in time in this season. And he went back into the time of a season one episode, which was fantastic as well. But isn't that what's great about the show, that it just... It does all of these different things and it just throws them at you. And I think particularly just goes, these are things from the comic that we think are cool. We're going to do them. Hey, Gorilla Grodd. No other show is going to do Gorilla Grodd. We're going to do a character like that. We're going to do Killer Shark because it's funny. And because we think we can, you know, do an episode around it. And most of the time, they've been right, because they've kind of set the tone very early on for... what as an audience member you can expect. And I think you're constantly on your toes because of it.
It manages to strike a balance, and it is a difficult thing to do, and it's something that I think, again, I would see it as a characteristic of the superhero stuff that I like the most. Superhero storytelling generally often has a problem with the level to which it should take itself seriously. And it's very easy to either take yourself far too seriously or not take yourself seriously enough and be ridiculous without kind of any redeeming features. And The Flash, like many of my favourite comics, takes the conceit seriously. Like, you know, it's not a parody. You know, the stories are serious and you know, the stories have weight and the characters have weight and you care about them. But within that, it doesn't take itself too seriously. You know, it acknowledges that at its core it's a little bit silly and it has fun with that, but it does it along with you rather than just, you know, relentlessly poking fun at the idea of superheroes. You know, it will just acknowledge, yeah, this is all a little bit ludicrous. And it'll do that, whether it'll do that by, you know, bringing in some of the sillier anthropomorphic characters, or whether it'll do it by winding up Wentworth Miller and letting him go. You know, it's just...
Mark Hamill.
Yeah, Mark Hamill. I mean, you know, yeah, Mark Hamill obviously, yeah, resuming a role from the previous show and just doing his Mark Hamill thing. But, yeah, I think nothing gets the tone of The Flash across better than the way that Wentworth Miller plays Captain Cold in it, because it's just, yeah.
Hammy doesn't do ridiculous. It justice, does it? It's it's fantastic.
But it's not actually Batman 66 levels of, you know, he is still, the character is still there, the character is still a threat. He's just,
and
just
they can do an episode like they did in the second season with his dad, where you are feeling kind of, you're exploring that character who is being played in that way by Wentworth Miller, but you are investing in the exploration of that character and, you know, how maybe he's hurting inside. And it's,
I still can't believe as well that they cast Michael Ironside as his dad. That's just amazing.
Yeah, it actually reminds me as well, Wentworth Miller wrote a film called Stoker a few years ago, which has that kind of, it's ridiculously over the top in terms of what he's written. It's absurd, and some of the scenes you're either going to go just, oh, that is ridiculous, what am I watching? Or you're going to go, oh, I'm so on board with this. And for me, I was so on board with it. It's directed by Park Chan-wook as well, which helps. But yeah, so basically all of the thumbs up for Wentworth Miller. In relation to the rogues though, Seb, I mean, I wrote down a list of some of the rogues that showed up in season one. So I'll just run through them quickly. We got Weather Wizard, Multiplex, Mist, Captain Cold, General Eiling, Gerda, Blackout, Rainbow Rider, Reverse Flash, Heatwave, Pied Piper, Peekaboo, Firestorm, kind of a villain at some points, Grodd, Trickster, and Bug-Eyed Bandit. First of all, we haven't talked about Cisco very much yet. That conceit of Cisco naming the villains is amazing.
Yes, that's great.
I don't know whether it's happened on things before, because superhero shows, I mean, like even the movies, it feels like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like it'll tell you that Jeremy Renner's playing Hawkeye, but they'll just call him Clint all the way through. Like, it's very rare that people actually refer to them by their names, and sometimes it is a little bit ridiculous. Like, even, I mean, The Flash did this, Arrow did this. We can't call them their superhero name to begin with. We have to call him The Streak or The Blur.
That was that's one of, I think, the major missteps that the show has made, actually.
Well, Arrow did it for three seasons, calling him, what did it, they called him The Hood, and then just The Arrow,
just
and now
the Arrow,
finally,
and then finally
he is the Green Arrow. But that was really nicely undercut on the episode, I don't know if you've seen it yet, the episode where Barry turns up on Supergirl.
No, I haven't seen that
yet,
actually.
Which is delightful, seeing Supergirl and The Flash together. Also, Wynn on Supergirl, who is, I would say, kind of like a poor man Cisco.
Poor man Cisco.
Suddenly turns into Cisco for a 5-minute scene where he just is really popping because Barry is there. But there's a great scene where Barry walks into Cat Grant's office and she's like, oh, what are we going to call this new superhero? Maybe we're going to call him The Blur. And Barry's like, oh, I don't know, I think The Flash is cool. And she's like, no, don't tell me what's cool. We've got The Flash. She basically is basically an extended joke about how long it took them to call The Flash The Flash in the first season. But yeah, at least it wasn't Arrow levels. But so aside from Cisco naming the Rogues, which, as I said, works fantastically. For me, these are, you know, this show suffers in the same way that Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow and Supergirl does, in that they're picking kind of random villains from the Rogues gallery of those characters from years of comic books, and for me, it almost doesn't matter who they pick, because Captain Cold is a guy with a cold gun. The reason Captain Cold works is because Wentworth Miller. I remember General Eiling because it was Clancy Brown. And, I just think almost always in the show, the strength of the Rogue is how fun the performance is of the person coming in. And if it's a generic, pretty kind of CW actor, I mostly don't care. There's been a couple of occasions, like I was actually thinking Pied Piper, who was the guy who showed back up on that time.
I didn't even realise that he was Piper until recently, and then of course he is, and that's why they've already pushed him towards being a good guy, because in the comics, Pied Piper was a kind of classic Flash villain, and then during the Wally West era of comics, he had reformed and became really close friends with Wally, and is also one of the earliest openly gay superhero characters, if you count him as a superhero by virtue of the fact that he sort of became a good guy.
So I
didn't even realise that what's his Hartley, is it?
Hartley, yes.
I didn't even realise that he was meant to be the Piper, and then until I realised that Hartley was the name of the Piper's alter ego.
But I quite liked him relative to most of the other villains that we've seen.
Yeah, he stands out, definitely,
This show, it can sometimes, you're like, okay, that's that guy who's got that power and he's doing that thing. And I have the same problem on Supergirl and Arrow as well. But like I say, occasionally they'll cast a Wentworth Miller and you'll go, oh, this is fun. This is really fun.
I mean, nothing sums that point up in terms of, you know, the Flash being able to make the best of its source material in terms of who it puts in there. Nothing sums that up better than Cisco himself, because it's, you know, before he got his vibe powers, it was not necessarily apparent, unless you knew the character's alter ego, that he was a character called Vibe from the 1980s, who is a joke in comics. I mean, he was created in the early 80s as part of a short-lived and massively unpopular version of the Justice League, the Detroit Justice League.
Right.
He was a shockingly ill-conceived attempt to create a young ethnic minority character who would appeal to kind of teenage... He was supposed to be a kind of cool, hip teenage character, and he just really... He's just awful. I mean, I don't know if you've looked up, like, his costume design. Google when you have a minute. It's just horrendous. It's just a horrendously embarrassing character. Now, admittedly, in The Flash, what they did was, you know, they stripped every single element beyond the character name, put him in there as Cisco, you know, the kind of character who is, you know, essentially that character is, this is you guys.
Yes.
You know, that's what that character
is. He's literally wearing
your t-shirt. And then they gave him
set.
The powers. Yeah, he owns at least one t-shirt that I own, and possibly more. And yeah, you know, so putting him in as the character that you identify with, oh yeah, by the way, he's Vibe all of a sudden. It works really well. And what it shows, and what I think is really nice, and what The Flash does a lot is, you know, superhero source material can often be embarrassing and a bit rubbish, but if you make a bad film or TV show out of whatever the source material is, it's not usually the source material's fault. And I know Marvel did this as well. That's been the ethos of the Marvel films. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy admittedly was based on a comics run that had been quite good, but was still putting together characters that were mostly footnotes and jokes, and it turned it into something great. And The Flash has done that with several of its characters as well.
And I'm not sure
it managed it with Firestorm. Firestorm was rubbish in the comics and rubbish on the show. But,
yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think the show also handles it a little bit better and a little bit more delicately in the way that it throws all these people with powers together. A lot of shows suffer from this. Arrow suffers from this, in that just like everyone's a bloody superhero. Like everyone's got something by the time that you're four or five seasons in, to the point that Diggle, who is a character that they came up with originally for the show, they can't give him superpowers. I think they wanted to make him Jon Stewart, but they couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so they just gave him a helmet, so at least he had a costume. But you've got like Speedy and Black Canary and the Atom and just like everyone that they know is a superhero. It's kind of what happened to Buffy in the last couple, you know, like by the time that you know, Xander's pretty much the only person standing around there who's not doing something like mystical. And it happens to a lot of shows, but what Flash has, I think, is a nice balance of having those characters with powers, some kind of roll in and roll out. You know, you had Harrison Wells who had a power, but now he's back and he doesn't. Caitlin is a character from the comics who we saw her in her Killer Frost guise this year, but they subverted it in a nice way by doing the Earth 2 stuff and kept the main character just a person. And like Cisco is Vibe, but for 95% of the show, until it becomes convenient for the plot to use it, it doesn't really matter. He is just that character who, as soon as he opens his mouth, you know you're going to do a little grin because he's going to say something funny that you're on board with. Like he's a delight every time he shows up. But I did want to ask, actually, Seb, because this show, obviously I haven't read much Flash, and I wanted to know how much of the like of the core cast of this show are actually kind of a big deal in the comics. How many of these characters are actually a part of the Flash's like setup?
It's interesting because I mean I will preface this by saying I've never been the biggest Flash fan. It's one of those where I've always kind of enjoyed the concept and the character turning up in other things than I have the Flash's own comics. And I haven't read very many Barry Allen comics at all, but there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is that Barry was killed in Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I started reading comics in the late 1980s. So as far as I'm concerned, Barry has always been this character who was the previous version of the Flash, who died to save the universe, and that's kind of what was important about him. And certainly one of the earliest comics I remember reading was a great Secret Origins annual that was a retelling, like from his perspective, of the events of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And it's just got the most fantastic conceit, which is that basically the way that Barry... I'm going off on a tangent, I know, but it's... the way that Barry dies in Crisis on Infinite Earths is he stops a reality-altering cannon from being fired by running faster than light, so because he has to catch the tachyon that's going to power the machine. And so for the first time in his life, he breaks the light barrier in order to do so. And in Crisis on Infinite Earths, all that you see happen is he runs really fast and he destroys the machine and he stops it and he dies. But then in this annual expands on that and basically says that at the moment that he travelled faster than light, he travels back in time and becomes the lightning bolt that gives him his powers when he has the accident. So at the moment that Barry died, he goes back in a loop and he basically lives his life in a perpetual loop. And it was a brilliant story. And that was kind of my main takeaway from Barry. So when I was kind of growing up reading comics, Wally West was the Flash. And what the Wally comics tend to centre on is dealing with being the Flash in the aftermath of this kind of legacy that's come before you, you know, having been Kid Flash and becoming the Flash. Mm. And while he kind of has his ups and downs as a character, and particularly in the early part of his solo run, he's kind of a dick, actually. And that's kind of the premise of the series, is that he's sort of trying to become a superhero, but in a very different way from people before. So what I mean by saying that is that, you know, I don't have a huge familiarity with Barry Allen and his supporting cast and his set of characters. And then it was about five or six years ago, no longer than that, probably nearly 10 years ago, that he got brought back in Flash Rebirth, because Geoff Johns grew up reading Barry Allen Flash comics. So when he had the chance, he brought Barry back instead. So I don't really know how true the show is to the actual original Barry Allen Flash comics, although I would suspect not very much. What this show actually does really well, and I think better than most DC-based shows and even movies have done, is it feels like something that belongs in the DC universe. So it's not so much that it's a great Flash show for me. It's more that it's a great DC Universe show. So a lot of the characters that they've brought in, like, I'll recognise names of characters, but it's not usually because they're a Flash character, it's because they're a DC character. With the villains, they have most often tended to be, like, notable Flash villains, you know, when it's people like Weather Wizard and Captain... Flash is famous for kind of having his rogues gallery, you know, of a particular group of characters called the Rogues, who have even had comics about them, you know, as a group, because they, you know, they, in later comics, they tended to try and make them a bit more morally ambiguous. I'm surprised they still haven't done the Mirror Master yet. I don't know if you got in your Animal Man read, if you got as far as the issue where Grant Morrison brought in a new Scottish Mirror Master.
No.
Mirror Master is a classic, again, Silver Age Flash villain. He's from the same era as Captain Cold and the Weather Wizard and Rainbow, whatever his name is, and all of that lot. But for some reason, they haven't done him in the show yet. But if they do, I hope they do the foul-mouthed Scottish version that Grant Morrison created in Animal Man, because he's hilarious. But other than that, you know, like, when you get a character name that you know is going to turn out to be superpowered, it's usually that I recognise them from the wider DC universe rather than from Flash.
Arrow seemed to have that with, like, quite a lot of Batman characters showing up. Mm. Ra's al Ghul being a major villain, and is Deathstroke Batman to begin with?
Deathstroke is... Deadshot is Batman. Deathstroke is from Teen Titans.
Right, but it does seem like they are kind of borrowing from the wider, you know, from the wider DC universe. Yeah. And Arrow did a little bit of Suicide Squad at one point, and that is nice. What you said about Mirror Master, I am desperately hoping they cast Peter Mullen from the very little you told me about him. Foul-mouthed and Scottish, yes, please. What I want to know, though, Seb, is he by day just your ordinary forensic scientist? Which might be my favourite introduction to any TV show ever. It makes me giggle every time I've heard it. I was like, there is no one who by day is just an ordinary forensic scientist.
Yeah.
And just going back to right at the beginning, Seb, because I came into this show when I first watched it, having seen the episodes that Barry Allen had showed up on Arrow, and, you know, thought, I quite like him. He's got really good chemistry with Felicity on Arrow, and I guess I'll give this Flash TV show a go. It seemed like people were quite excited about the idea. But that was about it. But you must have had more association with the Flash from whatever of the comics, and also I'd imagine from the John Wesley Shipp show.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'm not sure how much I could tell you about it in terms of remembering it, but I do remember, like, basically, I mean, we would be talking like early 90s, not necessarily when it was on TV, but I remember renting a video that had, because didn't they do a pilot that was kind of basically a TV movie? And I'm sure there was a VHS that had the TV movie, and then there was a VHS that had maybe like two or three episodes. Right. So I remember, you know, that's one of the earliest, like, post Christopher Reeve Superman and first Tim Burton Batman, that would probably have maybe have been like the third or fourth live action superhero thing I would have watched. So even though I wasn't massively into The Flash, I remember renting that video and watching it with my dad. And so that's why, you know, I've always had this association of John Wesley Shipp as being The Flash and being a superhero. So when he showed up in like Dawson's Creek, it was always, oh, that's The Flash as Dawson's dad. Whereas when he shows up in The Flash here, everyone else is like, oh, that's Dawson's dad. You know, and I remember that as being, certainly it was quite different. You know, it didn't have the sort of the budget to do the you know, fighting all the metahumans that this show has. I think generally, if I recall, he basically just used his speed to stop like bank robbers and stuff most of the time. But I do remember it at least having a similar thing of being a quite earnest take. And, you know, it didn't quite have the kind of lightness of touch that this show does, but it did have, you know, It was a pretty kind of honest and good-natured superhero show, from what I remember of it. So that kind of, I think, certainly when they put John and Wesley Shipp in this, it positively coloured, I think, my perceptions of this. I think what it made me think, and it was something that I kind of thought all along, was if you're going to do a superhero TV show and you're going to pick a character, Flash is very well-suited. He's well-suited to, even though we've had problems with it, he's well suited to, you know, threat of the week type stories. He's got a power set that's got a good visual look that you can do on screen, but also if you're on a tight budget, you can just show whizzy red lines and that'll do the job. You know, you're not going to worry about him flying and stuff. It's just, you know, it did strike me as a bit of a no-brainer, as if you were going to do a DC Comics TV show, you know, you weren't going to do Green Lantern. You know, Flash seemed a really good fit for this, more so than for a movie, I think. Despite not having read and enjoyed a load of comics with Barry Allen specifically, and like I say, you know, I've read a decent amount of the Wally stuff, it was something I was looking forward to start with. I did have pretty good expectations about this. And then, you know, even though I don't think they got the costume right to start with, I still don't think the costume's great, but at least they got the logo right for the second season.
It's slowly progressing. We still haven't even reached the version that he's wearing in that in the room where his mother died. That's still a future version of the costume that we haven't seen him wearing yet. So
I loved the there's an image going around that's an exclusive screen grab from season 36 of The Flash, and it's just that room with about 40 different iterations of The Flash superimposed onto it.
I mean, I love that about this show. I loved the season one finale. For me, was a kind of a pinnacle of all of the stuff that the show does well. It had this. It had the crazy time travel stuff at the centre of it. It had him running down a portal and seeing different possibilities and timelines and Earths, and Jay Garrick's helmet flying out of it. And you had him kind of having this antagonistic relationship with Reverse Flash, but kind of doing what he wanted him to do. And then going back in time, walking into a room, ostensibly to save his mum, but not doing it because there's another future version of him in the room telling him not to, and then coming back and say, it's just, I mean, that's the stuff for me where this show just completely coalesces and everything works. And it happens fairly frequently. I would say two or three times a season. You know, this year we got the Earth 2 two-parter, which was fantastic.
That two-parter is just so good, so much fun. I wish they'd spent more of the series on, maybe for budget reasons, because they'd come up with this ridiculous design for it, they couldn't, but I loved that. I said this on a previous episode when we touched on it briefly, but it just showed what a good job they've done with those characters, that they could do alternate versions of them and you would care, you know. And it would absolutely pay off so much stuff, you know.
Yeah. And Seb, I talked about how, you know, the character was introduced in Arrow. And actually, it was very frustrating for me. I interviewed Stephen Amell about a week before they announced The Flash was going to be introduced on the show. It was, I think, between season one and season two of Arrow. And I asked Stephen Amell, I was like, oh, do you think you're going to introduce any more, like, DC characters? And he kind of, now looking back, he was looking at me with a smirk on his face, like, I know, but I'm not going to tell you. I don't know whether you ever watched those episodes where Barry showed up on Arrow.
I didn't,
Arrow.
Actually, no.
No. But what? How have you found the crossovers to have worked so far? Because obviously, he's crossed over with Arrow and at least teed up Legends of Tomorrow stuff in Flash. And we know next season we are going to get a mega four-part. I think it's going to be four nights in a row. It's going to be Supergirl and then The Flash and then Arrow and then Legends of Tomorrow, maybe. But four nights in a row, we're going to get this crossover happening. I wonder how you feel that that kind of stuff has worked. Because I think between the two shows, we've maybe had three big crossover episodes so far. Maybe four between Flash and Arrow.
I think, I mean, I don't watch Arrow. Of the crossovers, I'm trying to remember, but I think the one... what was the crossover this series?
Well, so I'll go through them. I can definitely remember the two-parter where they kind of first met and were antagonistic and they were gonna had a fight and Arrow shot Flash in the leg with an arrow when he was training him. There was the kind of Legends of Tomorrow tee-up this season where they got together to fight Vandal Savage. There was also, for me, a really... I don't think it was a full crossover, but when Oliver showed up on The Flash to kind of help him out to fight Reverse Flash, it was kind of, you kind of got Firestorm, Flash and Arrow all teaming up to take on Reverse Flash towards the end of the first series. That really worked for me. I thought that was a really good moment.
Just looking at it, I believe that, and this is kind of relevant as to why I can't really remember, but I think in season one, I think I watched Flash versus Arrow, and then I think I did watch the Brave and the Bold episode of Arrow, or maybe I didn't, that's the thing. And then in season two, I definitely didn't watch an Arrow episode. Basically, my point is that did I watch Legend? Hang on, I'm just reading the description of Legends of Yesterday.
I don't think you did.
Yeah, I don't think I did. This is kind of my point. I have tended not to watch the other parts of the crossover, and it is a bit like reading a crossover in a comic. And this is my point. I kind of think they've done the crossovers reasonably well, in that I don't feel like I've missed loads by only sticking with The Flash. So I feel like when they brought the Arrow characters in, certainly the first time, second time, I think I seem to remember having a bit of a moment of, hang on, who are all these people? They weren't in it last time I saw them. But certainly the first time, I think they did a good enough job of explaining who people were. I think it probably helped in that season one that you had Felicity coming in and she was great and her chemistry with Barry was so great that helped to carry a lot of that along. So I think, I know that they've had some criticism for them, but as someone just watching Flash and as someone who I think understands generally how crossovers work in comics, I've tended to get on okay with them. I've just tended to go, okay, there's other stuff going on here, but the stuff that's relevant to this show, you know, I'd probably still rather that they weren't happening as a diversion away from the ongoing plot of this show, but I haven't felt like they've compromised it too much. I do remember Joe getting a little bit sort of, well, what's going on here, who are these characters, this story isn't relevant. So maybe if you're not as used to the idea of another story coming and butting in like you would be if you read comics, then maybe it's more of a problem. But I certainly think it's been the most kind of accurate representation on the screen of what it's like to be reading a comic when a crossover happens, like for both good and bad. The good elements and the bad elements are very like what the good elements and bad elements are when it happens in a comic.
Yeah, and it's like I say, I think sometimes it's nice, like when you go, oh, well, wouldn't he call his other mate who's a superhero right now? Oh, yeah, he did. Oliver's here at the moment that he needs him, and I think it's probably a little bit more difficult for Arrow to do that because Barry is so obviously has such a stronger power set than.
Well, it's a similar thing with, you know, given what we've now heard about Superman, it doesn't seem likely that Supergirl will just exist in the same universe. But if Supergirl did exist in the same universe, then the idea of Zoom coming to Central City and saying, I'm going to take over this city and then I'm going to take over the world, would be the most laughable thing. Because if you're in a world with Superman in it, then Zoom is not going to take over the world, you know?
But from the other point of view, you can put Barry into Supergirl because...
Yeah.
His power set, they kind of, he's powerful enough to operate and have some influence there, but he's not going to completely break the logic.
Exactly.
And I think sometimes it can work nice with the smaller characters as well. I mean, Sisko turned up on an episode of Arrow and kind of, I don't know whether it showed up on The Flash as well, where he got like a signed photo of him with Black Canary in costume, and it was it was a delightful moment. But then you can kind of get the other side of things where Diggle turned up on an episode of Arrow this season where I think it was a Killer Shark episode, and he didn't do anything, and you were like, "Ah, oh, I guess if you're gonna do this, give them something to do." Yeah. And I think that can happen both ways. But it's, you know, probably same as we see with the Marvel movies. There are some good points, and there are some bad points to having a shared universe, and it's what you make of it, I think.
Mm.
Just before we wrap this up, I mean, we've mentioned kind of on a previous podcast what we're hoping to see at least at the start of next season on The Flash after he has created that Flashpoint moment. But do you have any other hopes for The Flash or the extended Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow universe as we move forward now towards a third season for The Flash and further seasons of those other shows?
Well, I'm disappointed that they've cast Superman and it is neither Brandon Routh nor John Hamm.
Should have been John Hamm.
A shame. Really should have been John Hamm. That was the perfect time to do
it. The guy looks,
probably couldn't afford it.
The guy looks quite good though, Seth. I think he looks. Yeah. I don't know what he's like as an actor, but he looks quite good.
I don't know really. I mean, I still need to catch up on Supergirl, and I still need to decide if I'm going to get into Legends of Tomorrow or not. At the moment, I'm maybe veering towards not. What I've heard doesn't make me think that I'll want a full. If it was like Agent Carter and it was like a 10 episode thing in the middle, I might give it a shot, but I don't know if I can commit to a 22 episode season.
Hey,
of that
sounds to me like a 4-part crossover at the start of next season might be a good idea. Like, this might be a jumping on point for any of these other three shows.
And it depends what they do with Green Arrow. I mean, I'm in a bit of a Green Arrow mood because of how good the Green Arrow Rebirth comics have been. So, you know, I wouldn't be averse to, if Ollie is anything like that, him turning up could be good.
Read them digitally. Flash, read them in print. That's my advice to you. Bloody ads.
Yeah, you're learning about this. Listen, I've been reading print comics with adverts in for 30 years. So
absolutely.
I'm already aware how digital stripping them out is so much better. Yeah. But it is. Yeah, for Flash, I mean, I just hope it continues being as good as it has been. I would like more alternate universe stuff. I would like to see more exploration of different versions of the Flash and the Flash legacy. And, you know, like, I hope that that's not the last we see of the idea of Jay Garrick, for example. Obviously, Wally's going to have powers and Jesse's going to have powers because they got them in that moment where we saw them struck by lightning. Yeah. So I would be very surprised if Wally is not Kid Flash by the end of season 3.
Yes. I'm surprised he wasn't by the end of season 2. It's the one of the few areas where the show has shown like some restraint in terms of moving forward. Although,
and I
very
think
unsubtle
sorry,
when it comes to Wally. I just love speed. Love speed. Speed is what I love. I wonder whether he will become fast.
I think above all else, my main hope is that whatever Tom Cavanagh is doing, I hope it's not just another reset of Wells. I want the development of Earth 2 Harrison Wells to continue into season 3. I want to see that version of the character in season 3.
Here's what I want,
rather
Seth,
than just another
I want
one.
Original Harrison Wells, i.e. original Harrison Wells for the first 3 or 4 episodes of season 3. I then want us to revert back to a kind of standardish timeline where Earth 2 Harrison Wells does return, but that there is also a second version of Harrison Wells, because I can't, like, that's the only thing I can think that improves things, is that we get
more Tom Cavanagh.
Yes, and him doing two different performances in every episode. Basically, make Tom Cavanagh the Tatiana Maslany of The Flash, and nothing could make me happier. Because he could do it as well. He could absolutely do it. And also that contractually, each version of that character has to say, "Run, Barry, run," at least once an episode.
Yeah. And one more thing. Even though I haven't caught up with Supergirl yet, given that Supergirl is bringing in Maggie Sawyer, I have one other hope, which is that Maggie Sawyer is played by Jane Lynch. I know I've already said I want Jane Lynch to be the female J. Jonah Jameson, which isn't going to happen, but there is not a character that is more perfectly suited to being played by Jane Lynch than Maggie Sawyer, she was originally from Superman comics, from John Byrne's run in the late 80s. You may have... I don't know if you... No, she probably didn't show up in Man of Steel, so you probably haven't read that, but she showed up pretty soon, early in the run that followed that. And she's head of the Metropolis Special Crimes Unit, which basically deals with, like, meta crime stuff. And she's just basically this brilliant, chain-smoking, hard-ass lesbian police captain, I think she is, to start with. She's such a good character. She then moved over into Batman comics in the kind of 2000s. She was in Gotham Central, which is a fantastic series. And she was, for quite a while, she was the partner of Kate Kane, Batwoman. I think they split them up quite recently. Say,
this character sounds like she could work on any one of the Arrow
shows. She does seem like someone who they could move around between shows quite happily. But I feel like, given the problems that they're going to have with not being able to have Calista Flockhart all the way through the season, I hope that Maggie's going to be quite significant and that she will fill the space left when Calista Flockhart's not in it. You know, they need to get that casting right because she can be absolutely fantastic. And as I say, I cannot see anybody other than Jane Lynch playing that role. It's so obvious, it's almost a cliched thing to do, but really, she would just fit it so perfectly. So they didn't listen to me about John Hamm. I hope they listen to me about this instead.
They're not going to, though, Seb, because then they're going to cast her a lot younger, surely. That's what these shows do. Like, we were never going to get anyone as old as John Hamm playing Superman. And just on a final note, the one thing that I would like to see more of in The Flash, and it's wonderful when they find an excuse to do this, and particularly I'm hoping the next time that Flash and Supergirl cross over, is more singing, because Jesse L. Martin's singing this season was great. In the first season, drunk Caitlin and Barry going to a bar and doing karaoke. Grant Gustin being a guy that before this was best known for Glee. Melissa Benoist before this being someone best known for Glee. Let's have them singing together because it's delightful whenever they find an excuse.
And I actually, since you mentioned it, I don't think we talked about Caitlin and Danielle Panabaker very much, but I think Danielle Panabaker is really great and, again, is really good at being one of the kind of character and kind of hearts of the show. Mm. And I think sometimes, because I think she tends to get overshadowed by other people, I don't think she gets a lot of credit for being really great in it and a really likable character.
I've got to be honest, I was totally on board with that. I have found that the better that Iris has got, the worse that Caitlin has got, especially all the stuff with her getting tangled up with Jay at the back half of this season and the kidnapping. And I'll be honest, I didn't miss her when she was gone for those few episodes. So, yeah. I mean, for me, it's kind of like Grant Gustin is incredible. I think Cisco is just a really fun, well-written character with a really fun, light, frothy performance coming there as well. And obviously Harrison Wells. I mean, Caitlin falls quite low down the ladder for me, but I don't dislike her.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. It's like, for a character who isn't one of the best characters in the show, for her to still be as pretty good as she is, I think is a mark of how good the characters are generally.
If you stuck her into Arrow next season, she'd probably like start off as maybe my second favourite. So that you know, probably speaks volumes there. But yeah, The Flash is fantastic, and we will draw our show to a close there. I'm sure you will hear us raving about The Flash repeatedly in the future. But that's it for this bonus episode. We will be back in a week's time with our Kingsman The Secret Service episode.
And a very special guest.
Oh yeah, with a very special guest. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.